The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. It's your Friday morning edition of a numbers game for VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and the DraftKings Network. I'm Ben Wilson, live from Las Vegas Bar, Canada, at the D downtown. We're hanging out. My producer, Kelly Bidland, sitting right next to me. And Kelly, nice little NBA night for you last night, even though you had the old whack-a-mole of trying to get in front of injury news. Hey, what's new in the association? So good night there. A big college basketball upset as Wazoo sweeps Arizona. And we've got a lot to talk about today with a whole lot of NBA. We'll get into some NFL talk as well. Our risers and fallers, our very early thoughts of that, Kelly, in 2024. And this hour, Will Hill, VSiN contributor, joins us to talk some college hoops at 10:30 Eastern. So it's funny, I was thinking of you bought off your Magic position while we were on the show yesterday, but well, Kelly, hot on the draw there. You got right back on when Donovan Mitchell was ruled out there for Cleveland. So job well done as the Magic went outright. Is what, closing 5-point dogs
there?
Yeah,
it was like five and a half. I was able to grab a 5.5. But yeah, it was we were sitting here doing the show yesterday, and it was okay. Mitchell always had the questionable tag. And then Banchero pops up as an illness. That's when I bought off. Didn't think he was going to play. He ends up going. And then Mitchell gets ruled out. That settles in at like 5, 5.5. So yeah, I got back on that. And then the Warriors last night made that pretty easy against the Lakers.
They
nice
did.
Little 2-0 night out.
Nice little 2-0. It's just yet another night in the NBA. And it was a big night for the MVP candidates. It's funny, we had the whole conversation about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, what has to happen for SGA, even though the stats and the team success basically right up there with what Nikola Jokic in Denver's doing. You figured, okay, there is a clear path, though, for SGA as about a plus 210 as the second favorite in the MVP race to close that gap pretty easily and convincingly. And he did his part last night. I mean, 31 points, dishes out 8 assists, and the Thunder were the right side the whole way. They pummel the Clippers in the first game out of the break, 129-107. The issue is, Kelly, there's that guy named Nikola Jokic who is a triple-double machine, and he got to face one of the worst defenses in the NBA in Washington and was able to sleepwalk his way to a 21-19-15 game last night. So no movement at all on your odds board, but it was a really impressive showing from SGA and an OKC team who finished that pre-All-Star break, Kelly, a little bit weak. The against the spread numbers finally started to dip, but they proved they are still a force to be reckoned with in the West.
Yeah. First, I'll just bring up Jokic. All those numbers you just mentioned while going 100% from the field. Yes, the guy is a special player. There's no doubt about that. But man, that SGA little elbow jumper is one of the purest things just in sports right now. I mean, when he spots up to take that shot, it feels like it's going 95% of the time. He just gets a little bit of separation, pulls up. It's that special player. And that was, as you said, Ben, a dominant performance against a fully healthy Clippers team that, I took something away from that game last night where I thought that was a big time spot for two teams that I think the market views differently with this Clippers and Thunder team. When we look at what futures odds really are, even though we're talking about very similar records, a lot more belief from the odds makers in a Clippers team, and understandably why, than there is in a Thunder team. And man, the Thunder just handled them easily last night in that game. So, Doug, something to keep an eye on going forward. You and I were talking before the show. I did add a exacta bet this morning on the Celtics to beat the Thunder in the NBA Finals. I think that there is, Gil and I talked about it a lot through the NFL season with the Niners doing that, being able to, when you thought there was one team kind of in one conference, being able to pair up a few different exactas with them. And I really think that's what we're starting to have play out here in the NBA with the Celtics in the East. And I'm just going to look for some of these teams in the West as they may be drift a little bit over these next couple months to add them to that portfolio along the way. So yeah. Thunder's the first bet. Got that at 40-1 and added. We'll see.
That's a great number. If you're just doing that's basically just a parlay of the two conference champions, Celtics plus 115 right now, Thunder down to 9-1. So if you parlay those together, you're getting about 20-1.
Mm-hmm.
you're getting double the price on that ticket, Kelly. So nicely done, purely from the math perspective there. With that loss, too, the Clippers, they actually slip now back behind. It's, you know, we're kind of quibbling here. It's very small movements, but Clippers go from slight favorites to win the West ahead of the Nuggets. They're now slight second choice as of today, plus 260 Nuggets up to plus 255 on that as well. They really only shift in the MVP market because the top two basically stayed the same, but Luka Doncic did have a big night as well. Can't forget about Luka. Guy's still a unit, and Dallas, a lot of talk about could the Mavs make a really big surge here down the home stretch, and they got off to a great start last night. Big matchup against the Suns, two teams at full strength, and Dallas was really good, especially Doncic goes for 41. Yeah, that's right. Not quite full strength for the Suns. Doncic, 41 points, 9 boards, 11 assists last night. And he's down to plus 650 here. Giannis did drift a little bit. He didn't play last night for the Bucks. He's now 10-1.
Yeah, it's a interesting movement. It's going to be, we've talked a lot about it a lot over the past week and a half, but I think that look, is there a path to Luka winning this award? Yeah, it's just this, it's going to go hand in hand with how this Dallas team finishes the regular season. And it's going to mean playing well out of that play-in tournament area. And I think they got to get to about I think the 5 seed before we really start even considering Luka probably. But man, the numbers are special that he's putting up. And I do agree with what you're hearing from a lot of other people that this is the moves they made at the trade deadline were extremely impactful. The Grant Williams experiment was an absolute disaster. You're able to get him off the team. I don't know how much you watched, if anything, of that game last night, Ben, but like Daniel Gafford was just so, it was so apparent the impact he was having on that team and on that game last night. And they have this rotation of bigs that they're going to be able to utilize going forward. Derek Lively has been absolutely awesome, the rookie out of Duke. That team, it's one to look out for. This West, man, it is just crowded right now. It is crowded. And I understand why people are falling in love with Luka MVP. He's putting up these monster games, but I do think it's still going to depend on that team success that they're going to have to find here towards the end of the regular season.
It's such a fascinating rotation, too, because you watch some Mavs games and you're just like, wait, this is a team that could be a contender, but then they, and you're like, I've always been I've always liked Maxi Kleber, but it's like, man, this guy's playing a whole lot of minutes for a team that is viewed as a contender. And then you have some nights like last night, where, as you say, Kelly, it all comes together. You have the role guys who are stepping up and finding ways to contribute. And all of a sudden it feels really balanced, even though on the surface you go, okay, it's Doncic, it's Irving.
Yeah.
Who else?
Yeah.
And that's what makes them kind of this wild card, right?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, Tim Hardaway, right? He's up there in the sixth man of the year race right now, but you're right. I mean, as far when it comes to scoring, pure scoring, you're relying on a lot on those three guys. That is for sure. Going to be interesting to see how this Western Conference shakes out, because there are some good teams, and I think a couple teams that just take, if they can take that next step, and I think that is Dallas, that's Phoenix, right? Like, if they can, Phoenix can get a little defense put together, stay healthy, like, that team's as scary as anybody. And when you're just talking about Luka Doncic with the best team he's probably ever had around him, like, that's a scary thought, I think, for anybody that's going to possibly face them in the West. A
lot of movement still to come on the Western Conference odds. We will dive into our division odds in our next segment, because there are some very tasty numbers that are still out there with 25 or so games left in the regular season. We'll talk about that next before Will Hill joins us to talk some college hoops coming up at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. News of the day, and we will have some NFL talk later on. Kelly talking about our risers and fallers, at least our very first iteration of this for the 2024 season. First news of the contract restructuring element here comes out of Seattle, where the Seahawks, who are projected to be over the cap, just barely, it's not a huge deal, but there is a lot of reshuffling here. You have a new head coach, new OC, a lot of change there in Seattle, but at least for now, the quarterback will stay the same in Geno Smith, who converts his roster bonus of almost $10 million into a signing bonus to help create about $5 million in salary cap space in 2024. That from ESPN's Field Yates coming out yesterday. So his cap hit drops about $5 million this year, although in 2025, it will escalate on the cap hit. At least for now, though, this makes sense. Kelly, there's a lot of decisions Seattle has to make. Some high-priced guys here, including a Jamal Adams type they have to make a decision on, some other players at the back end, and it creates an interesting setup now, because you go, what Geno Smith are you getting in 2024 after he wildly overachieved based on expectations in 2022? Definitely took a step back, though, was more like a bottom half of the league quarterback in 23. And the Seahawks, with this move now, are committed to him, but it's also an interesting team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a Geno perspective, a no-brainer, right? Like, it gives you an opportunity to stick around with a team, at least for another year. of where you're going to be the starting quarterback and you have all those weapons around you on the offensive side, I think a no-brainer by him, because I don't know how many other starting jobs he'd truly be considered for at this point. And who knows? I mean, who knows if he makes it through the whole season there in Seattle with that starting kick next year. But it's a tough team, man. We often talk about it, but those quarterbacks, either you got to – Hall of Famer, you know, or the guy on the rookie deal and kind of everybody else in between, it's hard to figure out. And that's kind of where Seattle's stuck at right now.
And it's just, the thing, too, where you have an aging Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's owed a lot of money. Jamal Adams can't stay on the field. 24 games missed last two seasons. He's owed a lot of money. And you go past you end the Pete Carroll regime as head coach, and somewhat surprisingly, with how there was no buzz whatsoever, he would be leaving. And now it's, all right, what are you getting out of a new head coach? First time head coach in Mike McDonald, who is viewed as this extremely talented and uber elite defensive mind. You go new OC, and it's like all the question marks, Kelly. I imagine that did not end up on the list for either of us as far as rises or fallers, just because there's so many unknowns for Seattle. I mean, they are a total wild card. You could tell me pretty much any outcome would happen in 2024, and I'd say, yeah, that's plausible.
I think it's going to depend on what happens this offseason. If we see a lot of those guys leave, then I think I'm with you on that statement. Otherwise, if we see some of those guys return, I don't really know how likely Jamal Adams is. That seems like too much of a salary cap issue to get rid of him. But yeah, let's say Lockett returns. You get that same kind of core wide receivers coming back. I mean, 7 through 10 wins feels like the spot they'll always be in kind of with that core. It's just, are they really ever going to be that much better than that? I don't really know.
Yeah, on the surface, you go, okay, new OC and Ryan Grubb, who's a super aggressive, pass-happy offensive attack, and you're going, all right, you have DK Metcalf, you have Jackson Smith and Jigba. Tyler Lockett might have another couple of years left in the tank. That could be really, really good. Then you look at the offensive line that was among the league's worst last year, and you're going, well, how can you have that attack if you can't keep Geno Smith upright? And that was a big source of his regression in 2023. That's the first part of our NFL conversation today. We'll discuss a little bit later in the hour our risers and fallers for 2024. But up next, some interesting numbers that are attackable in the NBA division markets. Three different divisions we'll look at, still very much up for grabs in the NBA season as we're just getting started. Friday edition of A Numbers Game.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. It's your Friday morning edition of A Numbers Game for VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and the DraftKings Network. I'm Ben Wilson, live from Las Vegas Bar, Canada, at the D downtown. We're hanging out. My producer, Kelly Bidland, sitting right next to me. And Kelly, nice little NBA night for you last night, even though you had the old whack-a-mole of trying to get in front of Injury Newsway. What's new in the association? So good night there. A big college basketball upset as Wazoo sweeps Arizona. And we've got a lot to talk about today with a whole lot of NBA. We'll get into some NFL talk as well. Our risers and fallers are, our very early thoughts of that, Kelly, in 2024. And this hour, Will Hill, VSiN contributor, joins us to talk some college hoops at 10:30 Eastern. So it's funny. I was thinking of you bought off your magic position while we were on the show yesterday, but Kelly, hot on the draw there. You got right back on when Donovan Mitchell was ruled out there for Cleveland. So job well done as the Magic went outright. Is what, closing 5-point dogs?
Yeah, it was like five and a half. I was able to grab a 5.5. But yeah, it was the, we were sitting here doing the show yesterday, and it was okay. Mitchell always had the questionable tag. And then Banchero pops up as an illness. That's when I bought off. Didn't think he was going to play. He ends up going. And then Mitchell gets ruled out. That settles in at like 5.5. So yeah, I got back on that. And then the Warriors last night made that pretty easy against the Lakers. They nice did. Little 2-0 night out.
Nice little 2-0. It's just yet another night in the NBA. And it was a big night for the MVP candidates. It's funny, we had the whole conversation about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, what has to happen for SGA, even though the stats and the team success basically right up there with what Nikola Jokic and Denver's doing. You figured, okay, there is a clear path, though, for SGA as about a plus 210 as the second favorite in the MVP race to close that gap pretty easily and convincingly. And he did his part last night. I mean, 31 points, dishes out 8 assists, and the Thunder were the right side the whole way. They pummel the Clippers in the first game out of the break, 129 to 107. The issue is, Kelly, there's that guy named Nikola Jokic who is a triple-double machine, and he got to face one of the worst defenses in the NBA in Washington and was able to sleepwalk his way to a 21-19-15 game last night. So no movement at all on your odds board, but it was a really impressive showing from SGA and an OKC team who finished that pre-All-Star break, Kelly, a little bit weak. The against the spread numbers finally started to dip, but they prove they are still a force to be reckoned with in the West.
Yeah. First, I'll just bring up Jokic. All those numbers you just mentioned while going 100% from the field. Yes, the guy is a special, special player. There's no doubt about that. But man, that SGA little elbow jumper is one of the purest things just in sports right now. I mean, when he spots up to take that shot, it feels like it's going in 95% of the time. He just gets a little bit of separation, pulls up, it's that special, special player. And that was, as you said, Ben, a dominant, dominant performance against a fully healthy Clippers team that I took something away from that game last night where it was, I thought that was a big time spot for two teams that I think the market views differently with this Clippers and Thunder team. When we look at what futures odds really are, even though we're talking about very similar records, a lot more belief from the odds makers in a Clippers team, and understandably why, than there is in a Thunder team. And man, the Thunder just handled them easily last night in that game. So, look, something to keep an eye on going forward. You and I were talking before the show. I did add a exacta bet this morning on the Celtics to beat the Thunder in the NBA Finals. I think that there is, Gil and I talked about it a lot through the NFL season with the Niners doing that, being able to, when you thought there was one team kind of in one conference, being able to pair up a few different exactas with them. And I really think that's what we're starting to do, have play out here in the NBA with the Celtics in the East. And I'm just going to look for some of these teams in the West as they may be drift a little bit over these next couple months to add them to that portfolio along the way. So Thunder's the first bet. Got that at 40-1 and added. We'll see.
That's a great number. If you're just doing that's basically just a parlay of the two conference champions, Celtics plus 115 right now, Thunder down to 9-1. So if you parlay those together, you're getting about 20-1. Mm-hmm. You're getting double the price on that ticket, Kelly. So nicely done purely from the math perspective there. With that loss too, the Clippers, they actually slip now back behind. We're kind of quibbling here. It's very small movements, but Clippers go from slight favorites to in the West ahead of the Nuggets. They're now slight second choice as of today, plus 260, Nuggets up to plus 255 on that as well. The really only shift in the MVP market, because the top two basically stayed the same, but Luka Doncic did have a big night as well. Can't forget about Luka. Guy's still a unit. And Dallas, a lot of talk about, could the Mavs make a really big surge here down the home stretch? And they got off to a great start last night. Big matchup against the Suns, two teams at full strength. And Dallas was really good, especially Doncic goes for 41. That's right. Not quite full strength for the Suns. Doncic, 41 points, 9 boards, 11 assists last night. And he's down to plus 650 here. Giannis did drift a little bit. He didn't play last night for the Bucks. He's now 10-1.
Yeah, it's interesting movement. It's going to be, we've talked a lot about it a lot over the past week and a half, but I think that look, is there a path to Luka winning this award? Yeah, it's just this, it's going to go hand in hand with how this Dallas team finishes the regular season. And it's going to mean playing well out of that play-in tournament area. And I think they got to get to about I think the 5 seed before we really start even considering Luka probably. But man, the numbers are special that he's putting up. And I do agree with what you're hearing from a lot of other people, that this is the moves they made at the trade deadline were extremely impactful. The Grant Williams experiment was an absolute disaster. You're able to get him off the team. I don't know how much you watched, if anything, of that game last night, Ben, but like Daniel Gafford was just so, it was so apparent the impact he was having on that team and on that game last night. And they have this rotation of bigs that they're going to be able to utilize going forward. Derek Lively has been absolutely awesome. The rookie out of Duke. That team, it's one to look out for. This West, man, it is just crowded right now. It is crowded. And I understand why people are falling in love with Luka MVP. He's putting up these monster games, but I do think it's still going to depend on that team success that they're going to have to find here towards the end of the regular season.
It's such a fascinating rotation too, because you watch some Mavs games and you're just like, wait, this is a team that could be a contender, but then they, and you're like, I've always been I've always liked Maxi Kleber, but it's like, man, this guy's playing a whole lot of minutes for a team that is viewed as a contender, and then you have some nights like last night, where, as you say, Kelly, it all comes together. You have the role guys who are stepping up and finding ways to contribute, and all of a sudden it feels really balanced, even though on the surface you go, okay, it's Doncic, it's Irving,
yeah,
who else?
Yeah.
And that's what makes them kind of this wild card, right?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, I mean, Tim Hardaway, right, he's up there in the sixth man of the year race right now, but you're right. I mean, as far when it comes to scoring, pure scoring, you're relying on a lot on those three guys. That is for sure. Going to be interesting to see how this Western Conference shakes out, because there are some good teams, and I think a couple teams that just take, you know, if they can take that next step, and I think that is Dallas, that's Phoenix, right? Like, if they can, Phoenix can get a little defense put together, stay healthy, like, that team's as scary as anybody. And when you're talking, you're just talking about Luka Doncic with the best team he's probably ever had around him. Like, that's a scary thought, I think, for anybody that's going to possibly face them in the West. A
lot of movement still to come on the Western Conference odds. We will dive into our division odds in our next segment, because there are some very tasty numbers that are still out there with 25 or so games left in the regular season. We'll talk about that next before Will Hill joins us to talk some college hoops coming up at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. News of the day, and we will have some NFL talk later on. Kelly talking about our risers and fallers, at least our very first iteration of this for the 2024 season. First news of the contract restructuring element here comes out of Seattle, where the Seahawks, who are projected to be over the cap, just barely, it's not a, you know, a huge deal, but there is a lot of reshuffling here. You have a new head coach, new OC, a lot of change there in Seattle, but at least for now, the quarterback will stay the same in Geno Smith, who converts his roster bonus of almost $10 million into a signing bonus to help create about $5 million in salary cap space in 2024. That from ESPN's Field Yates coming out yesterday. So his cap hit drops about $5 million this year, although in 2025, it will escalate on the cap hit. At least for now, though, this makes sense. Kelly, there's a lot of decisions Seattle has to make. Some high-priced guys here, including a Jamal Adams type they have to make a decision on, some other players at the back end. And it creates an interesting setup now, because you go, what Geno Smith are you getting in 2024 after he wildly overachieved based on expectations in 2022? Definitely took a step back, though, was more like a bottom half of the league quarterback in 23. And the Seahawks, with this move now, are committed to him, but it's also an interesting team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a Geno perspective, a no-brainer, right? Like, it gives you an opportunity to stick around with a team, you know, at least for another year, of where you're going to be the starting quarterback, and you have all those weapons around you on the offensive side. I think a no-brainer by him, because I don't know how many other starting jobs he'd truly be considered for at this point. And who knows? I mean, who knows if he makes it through the whole season there in Seattle with that starting kick next year. But it's a tough team, man. We often talk about it, but those quarterbacks, either you got to Hall of Famer, you know, or the guy on the rookie deal and kind of everybody else in between, it's hard to figure out. And that's kind of where Seattle's stuck at right now.
And it's just, the thing, too, where you have an aging Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's owed a lot of money. Jamal Adams can't stay on the field. 24 games missed last two seasons. He's owed a lot of money. And you go past you end the Pete Carroll regime as head coach, and somewhat surprisingly, with how there was no buzz whatsoever, he would be leaving. And now it's, all right, what are you getting out of a new head coach? First-time head coach in Mike McDonald, who is viewed as this extremely talented and uber-elite defensive mind. You go new OC, and it's like all the question marks, Kelly. I imagine that did not end up on the list for either of us as far as risers or fallers, just because there's so many unknowns for Seattle. I mean, they are a total wild card. You could tell me pretty much any outcome would happen in 2024, and I'd say, yeah, that's plausible.
You know, I think it's going to depend on what happens this offseason. If we see a lot of those guys leave, then I think I'm with you on that statement. Otherwise, if we see some of those guys return, I don't really know how likely Jamal Adams is. That seems like too much of a salary cap issue to get rid of him. But yeah, let's say Lockett returns. You get that same kind of core wide receivers coming back. I mean, 7 through 10 wins feels like the spot they'll always be in, kind of with that core. It's just, are they really ever going to be that much better than that? I don't really know.
Yeah, on the surface, you go, okay, new OC and Ryan Grubb, who's a super aggressive, pass-happy offensive attack, and you're going, all right, you have DK Metcalf, you have Jackson Smith and Jigba. Tyler Lockett might have another couple of years left in the tank. That could be really, really good. Then you look at the offensive line that was among the league's worst last year, and you're going, well, how can you have that attack if you can't keep Geno Smith upright? And that was a big source of his regression in 2023. That's the first part of our NFL conversation today. We'll discuss a little bit later in the hour our risers and fallers for 2024. But up next, some interesting numbers that are attackable in the NBA division markets. Three different divisions we'll look at, still very much up for grabs in the NBA season as we're just getting started. Friday edition of A Numbers Game.
The numbers told the story.
story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game for VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil. Gil back next Tuesday as he's enjoying some time in Miami right now on the beach from what our Bill Lady told us, Kelly. So
allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah, we can't say that.
Maybe he's in Bermuda. Who knows?
Maybe Bermuda. You never know. All those, places, East Coast.
Ben and I were just talking about
Bermuda. We were just talking about Bermuda. That's why we're bringing in Paul Carr to talk Bermuda. Hey, it's a great day. It's a Friday. Great day, Kelly, unless you are a representative for Nike and Major League Baseball pants. But outside of that, you're doing pretty good on this day today. As we welcome in our pal Paul Carr to talk some soccer from True Media Sports, find him on the Expected Value podcast as well. Paul, we'll talk a lot of Premier League. We have the big cup final this weekend as well with Liverpool and Chelsea. But MLS is underway. We're just talking Miami. And Inter Miami is just now this, this mega hype machine, essentially, with Lionel Messi. They win their opener, just kickstart the season against Real Salt Lake. What do you make, though, just of the actual betting numbers as part of this Miami team that were horrible last year before Messi got there, ended up not making the playoffs, and now they're favorites by an unbelievable margin. They're plus 275 right now at DraftKings. For context, LAFC, your second favorite here on opening weekend at plus 750. What do you make of the hype train that is Inter Miami?
I mean, from a betting perspective, like, those lines are just ridiculous because, I mean, look, it's a long MLS season. About 2/3 of the league makes the playoffs. So, like, Miami's line's going to be, it can't really get much shorter just realistically because they have to go through so many rounds of playoffs and, it's knockout soccer where things happen. So, yeah, there's zero chance I'm interested in playing this line. Like, honestly, there's might be a better shot that the wheels just come off completely and they miss the playoffs than of winning MLS Cup. Just because, I mean, they obviously have a bunch of great players. They're also, in their mid 30s or later, guys can get hurt. If things start to go wrong, it could just be one of those, the glamour sexy team falls apart type of stories. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's not off the table either. So yeah, a plus 275 when they're, not necessarily a whole lot better than those next 2-3 teams. And they're in a loaded Eastern Conference. I'm not going anywhere near that.
Thank you for setting the record straight on that, Paul, because it is laughable. Kelly's over here looking for no prices on
I am. Or an under on a win total. Okay, so there's none of that out there, but I do think the one that's worth bringing up is maybe the top goal scorer market, because you got Messi at plus 275, and then Luis Suarez is on the same team with him now, right? He's second, plus 750. Right. Everybody else's double digits are longer. Is there, and I know I'm randomly throwing a market at you, Paul, but is there anybody else in the MLS you think would have some value? I mean, when you're talking double digits?
Yeah. I mean, there's a handful in that 1,000 to 2,000 tier that I think are interesting, whether it's Boanga, who scored a bunch last year. Hany Mukhtar at plus 1,600 is interesting for Nashville. He takes penalties, which is also always very important. That's one big question. If you're trying to pick Messi or Suarez, you assume Messi's taking penalties, but you're not totally sure because that's an extra, 3 to 5 goals a year that can usually make a difference in a golden boot race. So yeah, the Miami guys at that short a price with some of the unknowns, not interested, but Boanga's not bad. The Atlanta guy whose name I can never pronounce at plus 1200 isn't terrible. Mukhtar at plus 1600 is probably the most interesting to me just because he's done it and been in that range before.
Georgios Giakoumakis, Kelly, is my
attaboy.
That's just my, play-by-play guy, stab at it. Just to, you just got to have confidence, Paul, and roll with it. That's really the key there. Let's go across the pond here where been a big week of action already. We had Champions League time. We've wrapped up the first legs, Europa and Conference League knockout rounds as well. And now we have some cup finals this week with the Carabao Cup. Great sponsor there across the pond. But Liverpool's dealing with some injury issues here. Mohamed Salah is very much in doubt there as part of a number of injuries there for Liverpool who take on Chelsea. How do you feel like that will play itself out considering Liverpool's been the better team on balance by far than Chelsea, but obviously dealing with a number of injuries?
Yeah, this is tricky from a handicapping perspective because we don't know, is Salah going to play? Darwin Nunez, the big forward up top, he's questionable at best, I think, right now. I think there's hope they get one of those guys back in some capacity, but we just don't know what that is. So if I'm looking at this on the bright side, you can get plus money on Liverpool to beat Chelsea in regulation, like plus 115, which is where I lean right now. Full transparency, I haven't played it yet because I want a little more injury information, but that's the direction I lean. Just because Liverpool, they're much better, even with a few injuries. They beat Chelsea 4-1 last month. So getting plus money on them to win, again, this is a 90-minute bet, I think is pretty good. I would probably hold off at least till later today to make sure you get, you know, a little bit better sense of who may or may not be available. But they're still a decent team. Now, they rolled last week in the league over the weekend. So you get plus money on the better team, even with some injuries. I lean that way right now.
It's certainly a number you might think is swung a little bit too far. You have Liverpool 25 points clear of Chelsea in the actual table, first versus 10th. And yet, as you say, Paul, plus price there right now. Mm-hmm. As we go to the actual Premier League card as well, a couple plays we want to start with on your actual card here, Paul, where you get a Brighton team that has been very up and down, a team that can score in bunches, but has been a little bit more inconsistent. Mm-hmm. They're 7th right now on the table. And after a disastrous start, I mean, Everton's found a way to climb out of the relegation zones for now, just very, very slightly. By no means are they safe whatsoever. Everton in 17th here. Brighton, pretty significant favorites there on the South Coast tomorrow as they take on Everton.
Yeah, and this, I've harped on this a few times with Gil as well. Everton had a 10-point deduction for, you know, financial issues, we'll just call them. But, you know, Premier League of financial fair play or still trying to figure out their relationship, and Everton was the got the raw end of the stick, perhaps. So anyway, they should have 10 more points than they do, just from a how good is this team perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little confused by this line, just because, I mean, you said Brighton's in 7th, Everton's in 17th, but their underlying numbers, you know, your expected goal difference, your shot difference, they're pretty similar. Brighton's about 6th in expected goal difference. Everton's only a couple spots back. Everton's just run very cold this season as far as they're not finishing super well. Their opponents have been finishing well, relatively. They've got about 12 goals worse in goal difference than they probably should on average. So all that to say that I think this is a much more even matchup than it looks. I like Everton double chance plus 100. So you're getting the win or the draw there. Some books you'll just find it like plus half a goal. This game plays into Everton's hands because Brighton likes to have the ball. They're second in possession in the league this year. Everton's 19th, but they're fine. They're solid defensively, fourth fewest goals allowed, second worst shots allowed. They've drawn 4 of their last 5 and they only lost to Man City. Probably should have won a couple of those draws. So yeah, this is just much more even than the table looks than I think these lines suggest. I like the double chance at plus 100. If you're feeling crazy, you want to play him to win at plus 310 or so. I don't hate it. But yeah, double chance, even money for me.
And that was a 1-1 match back in November when Everton was just in putrid form.
They were not good.
That was a rough time to be alive if you were an Everton fan there. 1-1 in that one. Two teams, Paul, for tomorrow that are, and this is actually not for tomorrow. This is the rest of the card here. It's actually the Monday night fixture there in the Premier League. Two teams that have been in horrible form. I mean, West Ham was so impressive. If you talk about August and September, they look like a different team altogether. If it's not Jared Bowen, it seems like nobody else can do anything right now. 3 straight losses for West Ham, but they get a Brentford team who's lost 4 of their last 5 as well. Difficult to handicap, I would imagine, on the side, but you are looking at the total here. What's the angle?
This is definitely a weird one because West Ham both played well and ran well early, and now they're kind of not doing either one, but they're still, you know, 9th in the table. Brentford's been running relatively cold all season, you know, and even though they're behind, I think they're generally considered the better team since West Ham's just a slight favorite at home. That's what that suggests. I just think we're going to have goals here. So I have over 2.5 at minus 135. Both teams' games average over 3 goals. And maybe more importantly, about 2/3 of their games have had at least 3 goals between them. Brentford attack has been better since Ivan Toney came back, you know, a month plus ago. So that's good. West Ham's defense is terrible. Bottom 3 in shots allowed. In expected goals conceded, 11 goals they've allowed over the last 3 games. They're not in good form either. And I just think from a narrative standpoint, like both teams think they can win this game. You know, West Ham's looking at a team that's below them in the table and they're at home. Brentford is going on the road to a team that, you know, concedes chances left and right. So I think this should be an open game. Over 2.5 goals, minus 135.
Again, Paul Carr joining us right now from True Media Sports on a numbers game. As far as the overall title race here, Paul, it's shaping up to be a great final stretch. You've Liverpool 4 points clear, but with 12 matches left, Man City 4 back, but they have the added match, 13 still to play. And then Arsenal 5 back. Arsenal have been in amazing form, 21-2 on aggregate over their last 5 matches, but just completely laid an egg on the road at Porto in Champions League midweek right now. Latest odds heading into this weekend, Man City even money, Liverpool plus 170, Arsenal 4-1. Where do you stand, especially on that Arsenal number, who are in the best form of their season, but did just have the big setback in Champions League? And at the very least, if the form continues, you feel like they're live. 4-1's tasty, but what would you say to bettors wanting to grab that number right now?
It is so tempting. I mean, I have an Arsenal future from before the season, so it's not something personally I'm looking to play. But the case is, you know, Liverpool is wrecked by injuries, as you mentioned. Man City is in really good form, but also, you know, one injury away, you know, De Bruyne or Haaland gets hurt. And we saw, you know, they were still good without him, but, you know, they could, the wheels can come off is probably extreme, but, you know, they could slip fairly easily. And Arsenal has had the best defense in the league, and they can build on that. They're not conceding a lot of goals. The question is just, can they score? You know, that Champions League game was, man, it frustrates me because, I mean, look, I had an Arsenal bet, so that's part of this. But you're the better team. Go try and score a goal. Don't play for this draw. And I was almost happy they conceded because that's what they deserved for not trying to, you know, go get a goal and win and cruise once you go home. So they have the potential.
We were
still Arsenal.
Yeah.
And you wonder if they have, I don't know. I mean, I'm a numbers guy, but then I start saying things like, do they have the gumption or the character or whatever it is? Yeah. And I kind of hate myself saying that, but that seems like what it boils down to. Or maybe it's just more the mentality to do what they have to do that we just haven't seen yet. And so the number, but I'm hesitant to go grab it.
Didn't even get a shot off in the Champions League match. Kelly and I were texting. We're like, God, what a rock solid under. And we kind of like talked in circles around it. And we're like, we're going to lay off. And
We should have just auto bet the under 2.5 for all 8 games in that first round. I think 7 of them hit.
Yeah.
So, you would be, if you round robin those bad boys, you'd be, you'd be swimming in some gold right now. Paul Carr, great to see him. As always, give him a follow at Paul Carr from True Media and the Expected Value podcast. Be well, Paul. Great to catch up with you.
You bet. Thanks, Ben.
When we come back out of numbers game, it is that time where we talk college baseball. We'll go through some of my early season futures and I am looking at teams to target when we return on ANG.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get our daily best bet emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide for March Madness, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. You can visit VSiN.com/pro to subscribe today. That is VSiN.com/pro. Big thanks to our pal Ryan Hyatt chimes in, letting us know he's glad that we're talking college baseball, Kelly. And especially he included you, Kelly, because he knows that you, Friday Night Aces, ball players, he knows.
Hey, I covered Buster Posey for a year, right? Expert. Actually, one of the, if we want to talk baseball things, Trey Turner I covered when he was playing high school ball.
Really?
That was one of the most absurd things I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. And Trey Turner? God.
South Florida got some great, great baseball prospects, obviously. He was one of those, though, that, I think he bat, 620 was his batting average or something, and you wouldn't believe it until you saw him. And then it was like he just hit everything. Everything was a hit. Yeah. It's incredible.
Is that the number one on your list of guys, now pro athletes who you saw in high school who were just like at it? I mean, you saw a lot because you're in Florida.
Lamar Jackson. Yeah, that was the one. I was like, put him on a field with high school kids. It was the most unfair thing ever. Yeah. It's like playing with Bo Jackson back in the day. Tecmo Bowl.
So granted, covering high school sports in Missouri, you didn't have this, the same number of guys. Just volume is in Florida. But I saw Michael Porter Jr., covered him in high school. He was a freshman, and he was like, you're playing against these 5'9", 200-pound linebackers.
6'7" at that point, probably.
Yeah, it was all football players playing basketball, and he's just absolutely having his way. That would be mine, seeing MPJ. Tolton Catholic in Columbia, Missouri. Didn't expect to get the shout-out to a Tolton Catholic today.
It was always the guys who played the other sports was always funny, too, because it was like Jacoby Brissett. Always enjoyed watching him play on the basketball team. Like, he was one that I covered, and it was, you could tell they just utilized him basically as a point forward. It was like, hey, you're the quarterback. Just be the quarterback on the court. You're not really that athletic when it comes to basketball athleticism. Get out there and be quarterback
for us. As a youth tennis player, I'd have loved to have seen, watch a Drew Brees, you 16, remember Drew Brees, nationally ranked tennis player. Just to see how good that guy must have been. Anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying we've got Paul Spohr here from Fangraphs to talk some Major League Baseball. I'm curious what Paul would say, if he was just extrapolating that out, who would be the current pro who would have been the most fun to watch in Little League? If you go back 15 years, Paul, I'm curious what your Mount Rushmore is on that.
I'm going to go pretty easy on this one and say Bryce Harper. I mean, he was on the cover at 15.
That's a good one.
The cover of Sports Illustrated, just blasting homers. I think it was out of Tropicana. And yeah, of course, metal bats or whatever. But yeah, I'm going to go easy there and say that watching him just decimate kids would have been great. You know, I live in Texas too, so I kind of get some of that up close with certain guys around here. I'm not always as tuned in on the high school stuff, but if I were more tuned in, there's so many places I could go and watch guys dominate in all of the sports, baseball, football, yeah, basketball. Yeah, so lots of great high school work here in Texas.
Man, I say that's a great...
That, yeah, Bryce Harper at the Trop. What was the story behind that again?
Well, he hit it off like the back of the... He hit it like 500 feet.
Yeah, but why was he there?
I don't know why he was there, because he's from Vegas. Right. So I'm not exactly sure.
But he put on a show. That's all we ever remember.
Maybe there was some sort of youth event there. And so that's why they did... I don't know, but that's my best guess. Because, yeah, he's from Vegas. So they had no real reason to be in Florida other than some sort of event that brought him there.
I just remember, you know, Harper's a year older than me. So he was like 14, Paul, and that happened. And I'm looking at a 14-year-old. I'm 13. He's like, guy looked like he was 25. And I'm like, Dad, is that what I'm going to look like in a year? Like, is that how that works? He's like, oh yeah, sure.
I'm still built like a 15-year-old. So you know,
you and me both.
Never moved on.
You and me both. With Harper too. He's in the news because his agent Scott Boras, they're looking to eye a longer term deal there in Philadelphia, causing a lot of controversy right now. Philly's a 90.5 win total here as we start to talk some MLB futures and win totals as well. Well, how do you see that going? What would the impact be there, depending on all the uncertainty with what Boras wants for his star in Harper?
I love Harper. He's an amazing player. This is a terrible idea for the Phillies. I say this as a Tigers fan who watched Mike Ilitch, you know, rest in peace. I respect how much he loved and cared about his players and how much he wanted to win a title. But he gave those early deals to Miggy and Verlander. Verlander one would have worked out had they kept him. I'm fine with them trading him. But he gave both those guys deals before they needed to be re-upped. And we saw how the Miggy one turned out. And maybe Harper will be better, but Miggy's a walk-in Hall of Famer, generational talent, arguably the best right-handed hitter of his generation with Pujols right there. And we saw how it went for him. Why can't Harper have that happen? You know, he's not immune to that. So if you're already locked up through 31, 2031, I should say, not age 31, why? Why? If you're Harper, fine. Yeah, get as much money as you can. I respect it. But if you're the Phillies, stick with what you got here and revisit it in, like, I don't know, 7 years. Like, why is this even a topic right now?
I'll admit, Paul, when that headline came out, I was like, wait, he signed a 13-year, $330 million deal in 2019. How is this even a discussion? But crazy. Is the case with the top agents, they're going to do what they're going to do. Paul Sporer, you can follow at Sporer, joins us from Fangraphs right now as we get our early thought preview here on MLB. We'll have a lot more of that here as we get into the month of March and the season gets underway. The one injury news that came out and has so far been an impact to another team in the NL East, it's Kodai Senga for the New York Mets here. I still see DraftKings at 82.5 on the win total, Paul. Some books starting to drop that. What's your outlook on a Met team that with a new manager, a GM there of baseball operations in David Stearns appears to be in somewhat of a rebuild here in 24.
Yeah, you know, they actually telegraphed that to their credit, I guess. Steve Cohen had said, you know, we're not going to necessarily push all in for 24. I thought it was BS when he said it. Turns out it is true. That rotation looks really dicey when you take Senga out of it for now, and he's going to be on the shelf to start the season. If it is a long injury, you just wonder where the pitching comes from. You know, Quintana's a really solid 3-4. He's the number one right now. Can Severino stay healthy? Can Minaya stay healthy? I wouldn't bet on either of them. Like, it's hard to say that they're both going to give you full seasons, 160 plus innings. Hauser, McGill, that's decent at the back end, but you know, they kind of need them now. Like, they're relying on them. I still like the offense. It's really strong, more or less top to bottom. You know, you got Brett Beatty, speaking of a high schooler that I did see here in the Austin area. I like him for like a potential breakout. I've always been a big Harrison Bader fan. He's better defense than offense. And then Francisco Alvarez, that's their 7-8-9. So it's a good lineup, but I don't think they have enough juice with the pitching. This Senga injury is scary. around 500. Yeah. I don't like my wiggle room there. So I'm probably not taking 82.5.
Yeah, no doubt. And a team that has a lot of question marks now in a deep division as well. Paul Spohr joining us here to talk to Major League Baseball. If we go to the futures board, Paul, let me just look at the top. Everybody talking about Ohtani and the Dodgers. Ohtani coming out saying his plans to take 50 or so ABs throughout the spring training campaign. The hype is off the charts. It's 103.5 on the win total, plus 350 now to win the World Series. What is the best way to approach betting the Dodgers, considering they are so heavily taxed in the market, if you want to make a bet here preseason?
I don't know that you can, except to maybe fade. I mean, it's just such a gaudy number, and I understand the excitement around them, but you're tagging a team for 103 wins. It's just such a grind. And let's be honest, there's plenty of question marks in that rotation. Now, do I think that they'll approach it throughout the year and continue to supplement and figure things out, because that's the kind of organization that they are, and they are all in right now. So they're not going to, they're not going to tiptoe around and not go out and make a move. Maybe they could be the team for a Dylan Cease trade, things like that. But you look at it, you got Yamamoto coming over from Japan, who looks the part. Everything looks like it's going to click, but you don't know when someone comes clear across the world here, how it's going to go that first year. New setup in terms of pitching every fifth day instead of once a week, different ball, et cetera. Tyler Glass now reached a career high in innings last year at 120. Career high. I mean, what can we really bank on him for? I'm a huge, huge, huge Bobby Miller fan. I'm totally in the bag for him as a potential ace. But does that happen this year? That would still be a pretty big step forward. James Paxton, really good when he pitches. But what kind of innings workload are you looking at out of him at age 35? 100 innings? Emmett Sheehan in the five spot? Solid, but again, how much can you really rely on him? I do like some of their reinforcements, Michael Grove, Gavin Stone. We saw bits from them both last year. Gavin Stone really fell on his face in the majors, but I still really love his arm talent. They've got a great system too, so they can go out and get whatever they want. But a .103, I can't do it with that pitching. I would need a lot more stable pitching to bet the .103.
In our final 45 seconds, Paul, if you're looking further down the board, who's one team you have already kind of circled as saying, all right, this is a really, really good team to look at as far as a longer shot, whether that's win total or just or pennant or a World Series in general?
I'm looking in the AL Central there, and I think you can make a case for every team except for the White Sox. I think they're pretty much off the board, but all the other four teams, and of course the Twins are going to be the favorites. I look at KC, my own Tigers, and even Cleveland. Cleveland could be the sneaky team. Their rotation is absolutely filthy, especially if it stays healthy and really connects. The offense is a little sketchy. I totally grant that, but Cleveland's a team I've been looking at. And then one of the Tigers or KC as kind of a rising team this year. They're both getting kind of some buzz, and I think my Tigers can make some real noise this year. I like the offseason they've had as well. So I'm looking in the AL Central.
Yeah, wide open division, it seems like, on paper. Paul, great to see you. I love seeing your faces. That means baseball is right around the corner, man. Right. I'm sure we'll be catching up more here as the season gets underway.
Sounds great, gentlemen. Take care.
When we come back, final segment for us here on A Numbers Game. Kelly Bidlin has an NBA play we'll talk about. We'll break down the biggest games for tomorrow's college basketball slate as well.